It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
Welcome to Show Me the Franchise, the podcast that talks about franchises of all shapes, sizes, background, genres, and types. I am one of your hosts, Tom Stadler, here as usual with my fellow host, oh, the Oopy Dooby Shumil Kadoi.
That wasn't throaty enough. You gotta get... Yeah, that was better. Yeah, I don't know what that first thing you were doing was. It made me upset. A little better. I like it.
I think I'm doing like a Fallon like impression of Adam Sandler. Like a Fallon impression doing an impression of Adam Sandler. But of course, it's Fred Dakin here as usual.
Yeah, it's me. You can do it.
I can do it
like you can do it.
Oh. You gotta throw.
But it was kind of funny to not put mustard on it.
Yeah,
if you just say you can do it,
but then nobody would know Rob Schneider at all, and then
and I can pass it off as my own thing.
Be like, look at the Fred man, the Fredster making copies.
Well, this isn't a Rob Schneider episode.
No, it's not. But they're kind of tied together a little bit, yeah. Right?
If we do a Rob Schneider episode, I'd want to do it more on like his politics.
Maybe not. Or do we want to talk about, well, no, Elle King's like, she's on the level, right?
Who?
His daughter?
Wait, that's Rob Schneider's daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, X's and the O's, right?
I didn't know that. I know that he has a daughter who doesn't like his business, but I didn't know she was like famous.
Yeah, which I know here we're talking about, the Schneider family and now that I'm like double checking. I'm like, her name is Elle King, right? I'm like, yes, it is. Totally remember it, but she was born Tanner L. Schneider. Mm-hmm. Now you know. Now you know. I don't know where the King comes from. That's not this episode, Fred. We're talking about Adam Sandler.
Yeah, look at that.
See, now I'm feeling it a little bit. Oh, we got off to a little bit of a rush.
Well, before we recorded, you said you had to shake off the sillies. And in my head, I was like, that's a bad idea if you're about to do an Adam Sandler impression. Yeah. And I knew that was coming, but I let you cook.
I know. And here I was trying to just do, I wasn't even sure if I was going to add any like anything like a finishable in the dick and a law or something like that. But I just kind of thought, just do his gibberish and see what here it gets us, you know?
It was funny, right before I got here, I just watched like a videos like a laughs for fundraising sort of deal. And it was Lou Reed playing Walk on the Wild Side with Conan O'Brien, Jimmy Fallon, Jack Black, Master of Disguise.
Oh, Dana Carvey.
Dana Carvey. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. And Adam Sandler. And Adam Sandler, everyone takes like a verse. Just like did that for his singing right in Lou Reed's face.
Yeah.
And Lou Reed did not look happy about it.
I can't imagine. He's probably like, who is this goof ass?
Yeah. It was just like a stare down between the two. And it was just funny that we were coming to record this. And that was like literally the last thing I saw when I was going through reels and whatnot.
And you just heard someone doing a very half-assed gibberish at you to introduce you.
And I looked like Lou Reed probably while you did that.
You looked unhappy. You were like, I think you were waiting to see if I was going to say your name. And then I made the choice right there to be like, I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to leave it at that and be like, why was Fred going to respond? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
But we got put on the spot a little bit here too, Fred, because as you may know, we were talking about doing an episode on college pro painters. A lot's been going on recently in the Milwaukee area. If you are living around this area or not, there has been quite a bit of flooding going on, which really threw our schedule off just a little bit. So it's been busy. Obviously, summer's been busy. We just got back from Maryland, too, like not even a week or two ago. Yeah, which was a fantastic trip.
Hey, I know how to host.
You do.
Well, it was a team effort. My mama and I know how to host.
Yeah, which, if you guys ever need hosting inspiration or people who know how to do it, the the Dakin family.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
Yeah. They Maryland and crab cakes. That's what Dakins do.
Yeah.
But so we will be doing college pro painters next week. So instead, Fred and I are here. No guests this week. We're just talking about Adam Sandler. See, yeah, now I can't say it.
You're getting into it.
Adam Sandler. Mm-hmm. But like, we'll talk a lot about this today. It's about his like some of his deadpan deliveries that I think I really like the most.
Mm-hmm.
Where he just sort of like talks at you and you're just like, and then it sort of devolves into his madness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Fred, what are your earliest memories of Adam Sandler, though?
It was definitely watching Billy Madison, I believe,
yeah.
Or Happy Gilmore. They kind of came to me at the same time because I don't think I watched them as they came out because I think that's like 95, 97.
Yep.
But definitely when I was like 8 or 9, these movies started popping up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the occasional SNL. But then from there on, I was pretty locked in and I was down for most things. I remember watching Waterboy as a rental, Little Nicky. So I was definitely deep in. I saw 8 Crazy Nights in theaters.
Ooh, nice. I mean, 8 Crazy Nights was not like I don't want to call it a phenomenon because it wasn't. I think, but if, for people who were in the know, they were like, he's doing an animated movie. We're mm-hmm. we're really getting a different kind of Sandler now, right? But that's good stuff, man. I definitely feel like I kind of was around the same time. But what I remember, the very first thing, and I'm trying to carbon date this, is I remember the Hanukkah song being like the first thing that really like punched through the ether a little bit. And because I was like, who would make the Hanukkah song? Like, what is this all about? Because, you know, when you're a kid and you grow up, and this was, I think, the time during the 90s where like it was like really starting to embrace like Jewish holidays, right? Like Hanukkah, Passover were becoming a thing. They had the Rugrats episodes on those. Do you watch any of that?
I've seen the Rugrats episodes. I feel South Park even is kind of like showcasing the just blazing the idea of being Jewish at Christmas time. And that's kind of what 8 Crazy Nights was spawned from, too, in the Hanukkah song.
Yeah. I mean, it's all part of that same and kind of around the same time, too, where I think it just became like this huge like education, like over a decade, right? Or even like 5 years in some regard from like the Hanukkah song onward. But yeah, I remember I was like, okay, so I'm like, oh, all these actors are Jewish. That's really interesting to learn. And, but you know, I'm, you know, 8 years old at this point. So this was 1994 into the year. And, but I remember like a friend's like older brother had gotten like his album, like Adam Sandler's album. So we were like listening to his stand up, me being completely like so young and out of it. I didn't realize that, like, oh yeah, SNL is like a thing and Sandler's on there. Cause my parents didn't really start watching SNL with us until we were like old enough. So we were really more in like the Will Ferrell years versus like Sandler, Mike Myers. So I caught a lot of that on Comedy Central.
Yeah, I have the memory of watching Saturday Night Live for the first time. And it was after seeing Sandler movies and after seeing Mike Myers movies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of intense because they would just run. I was watching definitely a rerun during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's going through the credits at that time, it's like Adam Sandler, David Spade, mm-hmm. Chris Farley, Mike Myers, like all these people that I knew. And I remember the names kept coming and thinking like, this has to be the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And then watching it did have funny moments, but it's SNL. So it's like, if you look at one episode at a time, it's kind of, you know, feast or famine, you know, like there's, you know, some episodes that rip all the way through, but generally, you know, you're getting like a good sketch.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always I remember being really hyped and kind of the death of the hype a little bit because I was like, this isn't hitting as much as I thought it would with all these names attached.
Yeah, I think there are times where and the best way I think to even like consume some of that now is like looking at like those best of like compilations that like SNL made. So like they did like the best of Chris Farley, best of Adam Sandler, best of Mike Myers, you know, so on and so forth. And like that really, like you're like, oh, this must have been such a great time. But then, yeah, you do watch an episode and it's like, yeah, some of these sketches are okay. Like, you know, and it's all like dependent on the guest sometimes. And also, and I'll call it this, on the Hartman factor. I think Hartman was the glue guy.
No, for sure.
Whole thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorites. I loved him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Sandler, then I think then it was like another thing through school. Like Billy Madison jokes were getting thrown out, like lines are getting thrown out, Happy Gilmore lines are getting thrown about. And I'm like, what are these movies? Finally, like, okay, I'm going to go rent these from Blockbuster and watch them, and just cracking up the first time I watched it. I still remember just being in stitches watching Happy Gilmore for the first time. But yeah, it's, you get like that fever right away with him. And you're like, this guy's insane. Like, why is he like this? And then I remember my dad took my sister and I to see The Wedding Singer because he loved the soundtrack and the trailers. He was like, this looks like so much fun. And we'll talk about The Wedding Singer here a little bit later, but I definitely remember that one being the one that really, that was like my first like experience with Sandler for like the first time, you know, like not something I was hearing about secondhand. And I was like, I think this dude's got some stuff. So it's definitely an interesting career for him though, right? Because I think he's kind of became a punchline after a while.
Yes, but also like he kind of, it's like him and Kevin Smith have like that similar thing where I think people love them, even though maybe the output is like not what we want, but it never really reflects poorly on the person.
Wait, Kevin Smith, who's that?
Kevin Smith?
Oh, right. Kevin Smith. I'm like thinking Kevin James. I was like, wait a minute. Okay. Kevin Smith, right. Mallrats, Dogma, Clerks. I'm recalibrated.
Yeah, two people who kind of like had control of the 90s and still put things out, but it just, it's, and we still like them, but I feel like the output isn't stuff we're into as much. But Adam Sandler has something all on top of Kevin Smith, which is he'll also lend himself to other auteurs.
Yeah.
Which makes it him a little more compelling in that sense.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's more widely appealing, Adam Sandler, than Kevin Smith.
No, for right? sure.
Because Smith like has his like his followers, the people who will come out for anything no matter what. But I feel like Sandler, while he does have that, there are people who are like, I haven't caught up with Sandler in a while. What's he doing? I mean, probably a lot of people watched Happy Gilmore too to at least see what it was about.
Right.
I have not. I'm very curious to hear what your thoughts were, but
yeah, I still think it's worth a watch, but it's not good.
Yeah.
Like it's a trip down a memory lane, and it's, you know, that's about it. But yeah. I think sometimes that's nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes that's all you need. I mean, that's, we can get into the whole reboot sequel of it all at some point, but it's, I don't know. It's definitely something that, I don't even know how you put it. He is like a very specific brand of flavor, like right now. Like, it's, you're either going to really jive with it and you're really going to just love that. It's like, it's Sandler. Or you're just going to be like, I remember the good day. Like, The Simpsons is almost the way I think about him too. Like, once The Simpsons were like top of the world, and now it's like, well, some people still fuck with them, but.
Mm-hmm. I hear Simpsons back though.
Is that right?
That's what I've been hearing. New Simpsons good again.
Feel like that's the same line every like 5-10 years. People are like, it's back.
Oh, really? I've never heard people say Simpsons is back. I've always just heard like 90s Simpsons, or like, you know, seasons 1 through 8.
Yeah. I mean, I had a professor in college. Here's how this has persevered for the amount of time it's gone. I had a professor in college in a TV class tell me, like, or we were all like arguing with him because we're like, The Simpsons not good anymore. He's like, but it's still one of the top rated shows on TV. And he's like, and it still is critically well received. This is 2010. Mm-hmm. Like, so we're talking 15 years ago. We're already having this conversation on Simpsons is not good anymore. And he's like, but people really like it. He's like, it's, some people think it's as good as it's ever been.
I will say, if, because, you know, like sometimes with streaming, you can kind of just do like a TV experience where it'll just play stuff. Yeah. Like, I did catch like, and it was like season 22, and I couldn't tell you where that is. And I just caught an episode. I had a good time. And so I think, I agree, maybe Simpsons isn't what it was, but I still think they've got some output. They've got good writers now.
Well, I mean, I think it's like, if you look at it like anything, like It's Always Sunny, it's kind of found its second wave here, right? Like,
yeah.
Some people will say it's as good as it's ever been, maybe better than it was, but I don't know. There's still some older episodes I have a lot of fondness for, even if they were being extra shitty in some of those.
For sure.
But yeah, I guess for Sandler, though, to kind of get back to him, he is such an interesting person because I think while his critical reviews have never been outstanding, and they really have never been outstanding, really, right? Like outside of a couple specific projects, it's always been like, but people, but he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. Like, he'll treat you with respect. Like every other actor who ever has an interview, people are like, who's one of your like nicest people you ever met? Like, oh, it's Sandler. Like, treats you so well. Like, I'm like, that he's an easy guy to cheer for. So like his wins are really high.
For sure.
Yeah. But he wasn't always just everybody a household name here, right? So Adam Sandler was born in Brooklyn, New York on September 9th, 1966 to Judy and Stanley Sandler, who were a nursery school teacher and electrical engineer. He grew up in Manchester, New Hampshire, though, after his family moved there when he was 6 years old, which is where he went to high school at Manchester Central High School. I always thought he was a New York guy through and through, so that was surprising to learn. After his high school years had passed, he was an attendee of the New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, where he graduated with a bachelor's degree in 1988. So it was then in around 1987, it looks like, that he got one of his first gigs on The Cosby Show, which I don't know if I ever knew that. Do you ever
see? No, I didn't know that.
He played Theo Huxtable's friend on the show, named Smitty. And then I guess he was also on a MTV game show called Remote Control. Do you?
No, I didn't remember. I didn't grow up with TV.
Yeah, that's true. I guess for me, that's even a little bit too of a deep cut. I was born in 87, so this is all kind of before me. His film debut, though, was in 1989 with the movie Going Overboard. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I actually used to own that movie. It's bad.
Who was in that?
I don't remember, but he's the lead.
He is?
Yeah.
Really?
It's him like working on like a cruise line or something like that.
Oh, I feel like now that I see the cover, yep. I'm like, I've not seen this movie, but I have seen.
That's like you're going to a Blockbuster and you're looking for a rental and you see that and you're like, huh. And, you know, like it's never been talked about, so you don't get it.
Yeah.
Like that and Bulletproof were two movies, like the one with him and the Wayans.
That's, oh my gosh.
That's like another one you'd see and you're like, huh.
I feel like I've actually seen pieces of that, though, on TV.
Definitely have seen that on TV.
Mm-hmm. But, so that was his film debut. But all the while, I mean, so he's working right away or here out of school, right? But he also started performing comedy clubs, first starting to do stand-up at age 17 and had been regularly doing, like, sets, like, all through the years and started doing it again after his movie debut. He really kind of started to hit that scene a little harder. Have you watched a lot of his stand-up?
Not the early stuff. Definitely just seen clips, but I was never privy to like his albums or his stand-up, really.
Mm-hmm. I haven't listened to any of that stuff in a long time or watched him in a long time do stand-up, but I remember it being very much kind of like his characters where he would just sort of like do the big voices and the silliness and a lot of like... Like, I was talking to this guy, or like, I had a friend's brother who was talking like this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that type of shit. So, in 1989, though, he was discovered by Dennis Miller, you know, from SNL.
You gotta say babe.
Oh, babe.
There you go.
From SNL, babe. And he recommended him to Lorne Michaels, who decided to hire Sandler as a writer on SNL in 1990. Where he became a featured player the following year in 1991. And Sandler was... So this is actually kind of interesting because I think for years people thought he left in 1995, but found out recently, right? Lauren apparently fired him and Chris Farley, which...
Yeah, he was fired, and I remember that because the last SNL anniversary, maybe the 40th,
mm-hmm.
he did like a song about being fired, and they brought up other people who were fired from SNL.
Yeah, and it's just so sort of crazy because when you think of that era of SNL, like aside from like Myers, it really is Farley and Sandler, I think, who people think the most about from that whole cast, right? Like David Spade's not somebody you come to see.
I know, but I would say that's the name I would throw in that group for sure.
Yeah.
He had a lot of big characters on SNL.
I mean, he had good characters, but he's not like your, you know, your engine, right? Like, because you think of like SNL eras and like, they're all kind of defined by like one or two people who really like anchored a cast, right? And I think Sandler was one of those guys, though. Like somebody they could be like, if we got nothing, we're going to throw Adam and a character into his scene, into a scene, and just let that sketch kind of like really carry the show.
For sure.
So, I mean, it was really from there that he jumped into his movies. Because obviously we talked about Going Overboard being one of his first films. But it was around 1994 that he did his next movie, which I believe... You had mentioned already. Well, no, did you mention this already?
Billy Madison?
Was Billy Madison. Sorry, 95. I was looking at.
Yeah, I thought it was 95, then Gilmore's 97.
Okay, so no, I'm sorry. So in 1993, he did Coneheads because he bit part in there.
Not a big movie for me. I don't even know if I've watched that all the way through.
It's nothing to write home about. Like, especially at a time where they were doing a lot of SNL movies, it's not one of the big ones. But then 94, this is where I got excited, and I think I jumped ahead here. Movie I like a lot, Airheads.
Oh, yeah, Airheads. I forgot about Airheads. Airheads I like.
It's a cult classic, I think, at this point, right?
For sure.
That was probably one of my first real exposures to Brendan Fraser, for sure, too. Because I was a little too young for Encino Man.
And that's got a really big cast. It's got, like, Michael Richards. It's got, I can't think of his name, Judd Nelson from Breakfast Club.
Buscemi.
Yeah. Speaking of Simpsons, it's got, who's the guy that's a pain in the ass from The Simpsons? I can't think of his name, but he was also in Spinal Tap and all that. Harry Shearer.
Yes, Harry Shearer. Wait, Harry Shearer's in the movie too? I'm sure he is.
Yeah, he's the... maybe I'm thinking of Joe Montana.
It is Joe Montana.
I'm thinking of Harry Shearer in Wayne's World 2.
Yeah.
Playing the radio person who is costumed very similar to Joe Montana.
Yeah. Looking at the cast here, Farley apparently had a role, which I don't remember Farley in that movie.
Farley is like... I know he's like maybe a fan on the outside when they're like setting up the concert.
Uh-huh.
And he's like doing a lot of yelling, of course.
Michael McKean is apparently in there. I remember Ernie Hudson because he's like a cop in there, I think.
That's what I'm saying. Now we're talking like it's like a kind of deep cast of people.
It's a movie that I feel like should have worked. I mean, I think it works for what it is, but it's not a...
It's just not very funny.
Yeah. I feel okay giving this some airtime now because it's not going to make our ultimate meat of this episode, which is rather than talk about every movie one by one, we're going to do a ranking of Adam Sandler's top five movies, or our each top five.
Yeah.
Approach this. So, but yeah, because Airheads wasn't making my top.
Mm-hmm. It's a movie like I would like. And if people, like if I was hanging out with someone to watch it, I would be down, but it doesn't have a lot of good jokes in it. It's just kind of like a kind of a fun ride.
Yeah.
It's like any sort of hostage situation where the stakes are kind of middling is always kind of fun, I think, where there's a lot of like the hostage takers and the hostages are having like they almost come on the same side, which I think is like a trope in movies.
Sort of like do you ever see Biodome?
Yep.
Very similar vibe.
Yep.
Yeah. Other than the fact that it's Pauly Shore, Steve Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
The father-in-law of Justin Bieber now, I believe. Yeah.
Apparently has a podcast now.
Does? Oh, I'm sure he makes a lot of great opinions. The Baldwin brothers, notoriously great.
For sure. And both podcast. Well, I know there's more of them, but they're both podcasters.
is Adam. Yeah,
Alec Baldwin had a pretty interesting podcast pre-Rust, I'll say, called like Here's the Thing, and he would just talk to like different actors. And he would just get good people. That was why it was an interesting podcast.
Sure. Sort of like a Marin type podcast.
Yes.
But not as interesting as Marin. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rest in peace to Mark Marin's podcast. We can make our way up, Fred. There's a major gap opening in the podcast.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, so it was around 1995 then that Billy Madison came out. And I think that's the breakthrough for Sandler, right? Like
that was the big one.
Everybody, even if that movie wasn't critically well received, I think people loved it. Like, and people quoted it constantly because I remember being in school and hearing all the jokes over and over again from classmates. The like, shampoo is better, that type shit.
Right.
So maybe that's where we can kind of jump in here to our rankings and start going through the movie catalog. I mean, certainly if you want to put Going Overboard or Coneheads into your tops, we can do that. But I think what I did want to note is he did not come back to host SNL until 2019, which is kind of crazy considering how big of a star he was up until that time.
He had to have done like a one-off, though. I feel like a pop in, like, you know, and like they're doing like a monologue in the beginning.
Well, I think he even called it out. He did the 40th, right? Like he was there. So I think he probably jumped in as like a guest or whatever. But I know it was a big deal when he came back because they were like he had never hosted the show after he left. And that was an even bigger deal when Eddie Murphy came back because he was completely unassociated with the show, like until that point.
You know who I'd want on SNL who they I don't think would do it?
What's that?
I want Leo on SNL. I think he'd be good.
Has he never done?
He did. So Jonah Hill during Wolf of Wall Street did a, he hosted and he, Leo showed up for the beginning in the monologue. Man. And it was really funny because it was Jonah Hill talking about how like he's the lead of this movie. He's a big deal. He's working with Mario Scorsese. And Leo just kind of like comes up behind him and like big dogs him.
Yeah.
And it's so good because it's like, you know, he's a good actor and he's in on the bit and he can be funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if he'd let himself be that silly. But yeah. I'd love to see it.
It is hard to imagine. But then I think of somebody like Adam Driver, who before you see him on SNL, you're like, this guy doesn't look like he can do comedy. And actually, like, I think when Driver's hosted, he's been really, really funny. Like, there's a couple sketches with him that I still think about. I mean, the Kylo Ren thing was like a huge thing when he did like the undercover boss. But I don't know. There's this one. I think I've sent like this sketch over and over again with Kyle Mooney where they're like filming like a commercial and he's like some like over the top producer, like telling him he's like, he's, I don't know. It's really good. So Leo would be good. But Sandler, I remember watching that episode too, and I was like, this is pretty crazy to see Adam Sandler like back doing regular sketches after years and years.
That was like when they had Eddie Murphy back. That was pretty big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Murphy back. Anytime they've had Jim Carrey on, just like, man, that's got to be like the biggest what if because I think he tried out for SNL and didn't get in.
Yep, for sure. I think that was the case.
It almost feels like there would have been enough real estate for all those guys, though. He would have been upstaging everybody.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about our rankings here, because I was calling them power rankings, but I guess that is kind of what they are.
Kind of. We're kind of moved because we probably won't have a power rankings at the end, I wouldn't think.
No, I don't think so. I think this is kind of what the meat of this episode is. This gives us a chance to talk about his biggest movies. So I think you do look at a lot of these, and I don't want to cover too much until we really get into it. Because I was like, oh, should we talk about some honorable mentions that probably aren't going to make a top five list? But I don't know what you got. I don't know where your sensibilities
are. We could maybe do honorable mentions at the end.
Yeah. I like that. So should we flip for this?
Sure. Flip something.
I think I'm going to not try and flip a drink again. I already said I'm like the klutz of the podcast. Everybody's got one.
Not me. I got it all together.
Yeah. Fred is the glue guy of this podcast. There's no doubt about that. All right. Heads or tails?
Heads.
It is tails.
Damn.
I'll defer, though. So I'll let you go first.
Oh, you want me to go first? All right. Yeah. My number five is Uncut Jams.
Ooh, I might have this one a little higher on.
All right, so we're going to save it then.
I think so. I think we want to save it for our highest possible ranking.
And you're ranking top five, or are you ranking top five Adam Sandler performances? I'm just curious.
What's the difference in your mind?
The performance versus the movie itself.
I kind of tried to balance both.
Okay.
Because in my mind, I think a good Sandler performance makes a good Sandler movie.
All right.
How do you feel?
No, that's fine. I was just curious.
So, like, are there movies that you would have with him in it that, like, he's not at his best?
I would have to think about that. I was just thinking about, like, if I was going to do performances, like, I don't want to spoil anything, but I probably would have, because it would be hard not to put all the drama stuff in the front then if I'm going all performance.
Yeah, which I'll give a spoiler alert right now. I am going to be a little drama-ish heavy.
Ooh, okay.
But so
what's your number five then?
My number five is Big Daddy.
Oh, there you go.
Do you have that on your list?
I do not.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about
that. Would be an honorable mention, so we might not even have to do honorable mentions.
We might not be. Yeah, well, let's talk about Big Daddy. So this movie came out in, I believe, 1999.
Sounds right. Great poster, him and the kid peeing on the wall.
Yeah. Oh God, it's great. Yeah, I'm like, it was 1999. See, I remember that because this was the run. I think this was like his run right here of like big box office, like kind of like hits, but also like he had like a 4-year run of like big movie, big movie, big movie, big movie. And I remember seeing most of these in theaters because it started with like Wedding Singer 97, then he did Waterboy in 98, Big Daddy in 99. And then I don't remember if I saw Little Nicky in theaters or not. I think I was sort of like, that looks a little too odd for
too good of a time.
I might have seen it though. I think I did go to the theaters for that one. Matt, I'm gonna say something very reckless here. No, I won't say it.
Don't say anything reckless.
I thought that was like the last one of his I saw in theaters, but I think I did see some. That's not true. In fact, I know that's not true because we already talked about the one movie I did see, Uncut Gems.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Big Daddy, what are your thoughts on this first and foremost? And I can talk about why I liked it so much.
I liked Big Daddy a lot. It's kind of nice because this is a little bit of him doing his persona, but with a soft side as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it has something similar to Billy Madison, which is kind of like doing things that you would want to do as a kid and seeing it on screen, like the Richie Rich thing. Billy Madison, he's like a big rich kid, so you get to see him with his mansion. Big Daddy is just kind of like, what would it be like to do all the naughty stuff you want to do and not have to worry about it?
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of remember liking from it. I also just remember feeling like, oh, this is a little more adult. This is like, you know, kind of a more real life story, even though it is very goofy and ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it is almost kind of like a coming of age story for him, right?
Right.
Because to your point, in Billy Madison, in Happy Gilmore, in The Waterboy, he's kind of a child, like a man child. Like he's like a childlike figure who I think he is sort of like learning how to grow up in those movies. But it's in this one that it's like, okay, not only is he trying to become like an adult, he's has to also raise a kid, you know, and like, or try and be a dad.
Yeah, it's his character from the other movies, maybe not as heightened of a character, but in more of a real world.
Yeah, I think I do like though that he is a little more, he's a less zany in this one. Mm-hmm. As much as he is doing shit like throwing sticks in the middle of a sidewalk for like roller skaters and I don't even know. And just, yeah, like you said, he's kind of letting the kid like be a kid. And it is kind of fun seeing a kid be, and there it's played by obviously the twin
Browses.
Yeah. And I mean, they're cute as hell in this movie. Like they're so adorable. And you're just like, you are cheering for them to figure things out, even though you kind of know it's sort of doomed to fail from the start.
Yep. And it's got, I always love seeing Jon Stewart act.
Yeah.
And it's got that going for it.
Even though he is just kind of Jon Stewart in this
movie. Yeah, yeah. But I still like to see it.
Mm-hmm. But I think there's just, I don't know, there's a lot of smart jokes in this.
I wipe my own ass. I just love that it's played for drama and it works.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The courtroom. He's getting pulled away yelling, I wipe my own ass, and I'm crying.
Yeah.
Like he does.
He learned it from him too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you wipe your own ass, you're in it. Yeah, I think the courtroom scene though, it's a funny gag that he has like all these friends who are lawyers that everybody's turning out to like represent him.
Mm-hmm. And he's like a savant lawyer too. Like he's got the goods to be a lawyer. Because aren't they? Isn't there a scene where they're kind of talking lawyer talk and he like gives them advice?
Yeah, or he kind of understands like what he's saying, what they're saying, and they're like, you should be doing this. Yeah, and he's just like, nah, I don't want to do that. Said he's working at the toll booth, or which I'm like, how?
Because he was hit by a bus and he got like a settlement.
Yeah,
so he just kind of has like a chill job and he has like the coolest fucking apartment ever.
Well, yeah, which he rooms with Jon Stewart in. Mm-hmm. And it is like, it's like following all these themes of the 90s of like impossibly like to afford or impossible to afford apartments in New York, and like watching Friends or anything like that. You're like, can you afford an apartment like that with those jobs? And like right now, trying to even imagine what kind of job you would need to avoid or afford a job in Manhattan or a place in Manhattan, like don't even get it started. But yeah,
you get a fun ethnic character from Rob Schneider.
Look, I mean,
it doesn't age well, but him trying to read hippopotamus is pretty funny still, I think.
It is a good gag, but it kind of shows, yeah, Rob Schneider just maybe always kind of the butt of a lot of these things. Thankfully, maybe kind of throw him under the bus. But, you know, there's things in these movies, like many other movies from late 90s, early aughts, where gags don't always hit. Like, I think there's probably a lot of like homophobic humor, even with two gay characters in here.
Yep.
They're kind of played for, I don't know.
It's kind of like, look at how progressive we are, but we're still kind of being ick about it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's better than most of what was coming out at the time, but still, you know, doesn't age as well.
Yeah. It was definitely, yeah, it's played for more gags than it probably would be today, and probably it should have been. So, but all the same, it's a fun movie. I think it's, like I said, it kind of represented a transformation for him of sorts of the type of movies he was going to do or try, especially at that time, where I think it felt more like what the vibe they were going for, The Wedding Singer, which is another one I really liked, and versus like Waterboy, which is like a really channeling that like Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore energy. And sometimes there's a time and a place for that, but it depends. Definitely. What's your Sandler mood? So that's my pick number 5.
I like it.
What about you for number 4?
I have Funny People.
I have not have that ranked, and I have actually not seen that.
You got to watch Funny People.
I've heard it's good.
I'll talk on it for a bit. So even in 2008, I believe it comes out, 2009.
I'll confirm.
This is in a time where he's still kind of, I think by most people our age, in a fallow period, where the movies coming out are like your Jack and Jill's, which some people now vouch for is kind of fun. I've never actually watched it. I've only seen the Al Pacino clips. Al Pacino is pretty good in it. Those clips are pretty great.
I've never seen that movie, but the Al Pacino or the Dunkachino scene is a good one.
Right. I hear he's in it quite a bit and he's good. So yeah. I am kind of curious. Maybe after this, I'll throw on Jack and Jill. But it's still kind of a time where I'm not checking in with Sandler as much. Mm-hmm. And he's playing a comedian very similar to him. It's like someone who had a lot of these kind of big, goofy movies, was a big star, and then kind of is like not making the same stuff that he used to. And he gets sick. Like with like some sort of cancer, I believe.
Mm.
And he ends up kind of getting back into stand up, and Seth Rogen is in it, and he kind of teams up with him and they like tour together. And it's kind of like a somewhat passing the torch, but also like a reclamation of Adam Sandler kind of. It's definitely like autobiographical.
Yeah, that's the word.
That's the one. I knew the word. I didn't know the way to say it. Because it's made by Judd Apatow, who was like a roommate, I believe, of Adam Sandler.
Mm.
And the movie begins with a prank call that they recorded in real life back in the day. So it's young Sandler making prank calls with Judd Apatow. And then the movie starts. So it puts you in like I'm watching a movie about actual Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
And so the emotional stakes when you watch this movie are kind of intense because it's like, this is my guy and he's going through a lot of bad stuff. It does have the Apatow thing where I think it's like 2.5 hours long.
Oh, man.
But it's loaded with really good jokes and bits and it's got a lot of heart.
Yeah.
I really recommend you check out Funny People because that might be like my top Apatow just in general.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
Because it's maybe not as funny as like 4-Year-Old Virgin or some of those other Knocked Up, but it's just kind of because it's like that plus Adam Sandler and some drama to it. And I really recommend it. And that's why it's my number four. And it's a performance I put over Uncut Gems because it is so his real life. And I think he's putting a lot of himself into the movie. And yeah, I recommend it.
Kind of like his Birdman of sorts.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not that that was necessarily a Keaton vehicle. Well, it is a Keaton vehicle, but yeah, I have always had Funny People, I think, on my radar. It's just never really come up in the queue. And it's kind of a hard movie to find, I feel like. I might have to look for it and just see. It's probably like on like Peacock or some shit now. Like here, just stream it whenever. I think I always confuse that movie, too, with Grown Ups. And I've always kind of heard middling things about Grown Ups.
Yeah, the Grown Ups. Yeah, that's kind of like the kind of stuff that I'm not about.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he has a good time with all his friends.
Yeah, which, but I think the best Sandler in some regard, and I think you're starting to touch on this too, is almost when he's making a commentary or some, he's kind of playing against type a little bit or playing into his type. And he's making almost like a commentary on the types of movies, the types of characters that he plays, the types of comedy that people know him for, how he almost kind of gets like typecast a little bit. Right.
Yes. And that's definitely what Funny People is a lot about.
That's good. I think I'll have to check that one out. That one's especially now knowing that's an Apatow. I didn't know that, which I feel like my Apatow, I don't even know. Like what else has he done recently?
He does a lot of TV now. I feel his move is to like get behind a good comedian and get like, he did Crashing, you know, with Pete Holmes.
Oh, yeah. I watched a little of that.
Yeah, he finds a person, kind of builds them up, I feel. Like The King of Staten Island was probably the last, like, real Apatow-y movie.
Yeah, which was still 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
It's like,
only five? That feels, I thought it would be much older, but not much, but.
No, I mean, I remember that popping up kind of around the pandemic, and I'm being like, oh, maybe we'll watch that. And then it just, that was a wild time for watching movies.
I remember that movie having the same thing, though. Like, I'm not, like, the biggest Pete Davidson, like, person, but it does a great job where, like, Pete Davidson in real life, I think his dad was a firefighter and died during 9/11.
Yeah.
And it works that kind of, that works that stuff in, and it's him kind of, like there's firefighters and stuff involved in that movie, and he, like, kind of comes to turn with, like, his dad, and so for me, that movie hits because there's great scenes of like people talking about his dad. And if you have a parent that you lose at a young age, you kind of, whenever they're talked about, you hear just all these great things, and it kind of like deifies them. Mm-hmm. And there's this great scene where like some of the firefighter friends like tell him stories about like his dad being kind of a dick about like things. And it's kind of a great moment. So I do recommend those, but Funny People for sure should be like at the top of your watch.
All right. Oh, for a Sandler, maybe that over Happy Gilmore too.
Yeah, oh, definitely for sure.
Which gets me to my number four, and we'll just decide if we're going to talk about this now or not, because I do have Happy Gilmore at number four.
I have it higher, so.
All right. I'll reserve my thoughts for now then, but that is my number four, Gilmore.
All right. I got to pull up.
So, yeah, where are you at for number three?
My number three is Little Nicky.
Oh, boy. All right.
What, you don't like Little Nicky?
Let's hear it. Let's hear first why you love Little Nicky, and I'll tell you where my thoughts are.
It's got a banging soundtrack. Okay. It's metal as hell. It's got a stacked cast and great cameos and pop-ins.
Sure.
It's got heart. It does have heart. And it has a lot of jokes, and it's silly in the right way. And it's also a really good New York movie. Mm. I feel like that almost takes place in the same world as Men in Black.
Yeah, I guess it does kind of have.
And that. Not because they both have talking dogs.
No, but it does kind of have that Sondheim like feel to it a little bit.
Sondheim?
It's not Sondheim.
Sonnenfeld?
Sonnenfeld, yeah. Not Seinfeld, but God, I'm like, I'm all over the place with names today. I'm like, who's who again? It's been a couple days. Dealt with some water in the basement.
Yeah.
A lot of like light sleeping. but yes, yeah, Sondheim, it has that feel to it. But I'm trying to see who actually directed that, because that came out in 2000.
Mm-hmm. That's like a staple Sandler guy who directed that one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Stephen Brill, who also did like Mr. Deeds and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also just like, it's got great sets of the heaven and hell. I really like the like metal characters that help out Little Nicky, who are, you know, in the Sandler stable.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a movie that if I had revisited more now, I might enjoy it a little bit more. But I do remember at the time I was not vibing with it really that much.
I'm surprised, because you do like some metal.
I do love some metal.
And maybe that's why Josh and I bond over Little Nicky. We're both big Little Nicky fans.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, it does. I mean, the music, it definitely has that whole like, I don't know, like dream sequence in Beavis and Butthead vibe is what I always think of, like with that, just kind of cartoony of sorts.
Yeah, it's got new metal music, and it's got like heavy metal 80s music in it, which is kind of fun. It's got,
yeah.
I remember I had the soundtrack, it has like Incubus on it, POD, of course, Pod.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I mean, it's enough for me for the movie that has Harvey Keitel playing Satan, but there's also Satan's dad, who's retired, who's Rodney Dangerfield,
yep,
who's just kind of like a pest, like running around annoying everyone.
And who is the love interest in it? Is it like
Patricia Arquette?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, that's kind of crazy. I don't remember that at all.
And R.I.P. It's got Ozzy in it.
I do remember Ozzy at the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, right, it's like Reese Fons just being like a little bit of a dick. And like, who's the other guy? Because he has like two brothers.
Tiny Lister Jones Tiny Lister Jones, something like that.
Yeah, Tiny Lister Jr.
I always call it Jones for some reason.
I mean, I don't know. It's just who he is. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I've seen the movie a long time ago. I think the issue I had with it even at the time is that him in the movie is a little just,
it's a little too much. He's like talking out of the side of his mouth the whole time.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
I like it that he's a sweetheart.
I mean, he is, but he's always a sweetheart. There's just,
he's kind of, but he's usually angry a lot. And here he's like kind of like the nicest, sweetest guy.
Yeah, he's like not a child of Satan, really, at least in that regard.
And I remember when I was younger, the other reason why I liked this movie a lot is it pushes that PG-13 rating.
Oh, sure.
Like, it's so close to an R.
Doesn't Kevin Nealon get like boobs on his head?
Yes. And that's why I love like Rodney Dangerfield wants to bring him to his room.
Oh, God. Sorry,
but then Kevin Nealon gets into having the boobs on his head, and he starts accessorizing. Yeah. He gets like the different brassieres, and he's trying things out.
Ridiculous. I'll allow it. I'm not going to yuck your yum. It sounds like a movie that you have a lot of affection for.
And then every day at 3:00, they have that appointment where they have to shove a pineapple to Hitler's ass, which is pretty great.
I don't know.
in this day and age, that's just me. I'm just putting this out there. I don't like Nazis. So I mean, like the idea of
a hot take, Fred, but
it's a very hot take these days.
One I can get behind, and they should have those appointments for probably more than just Hitler, right? But, you know, well, that's another topic. But little Nikki, I know, kind of right at the tail end of that run, because that was the follow up to Big Daddy, I think.
I would think, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
And that definitely ushered in a different era of Sandler, which, yeah, but I don't have a lot else to share about Little Nicky. It's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yep.
But I am going to go for my number three, and I'm curious if this shows up on your list. Maybe, maybe not. Punch Drunk Love?
I do not have Punch Drunk Love on mine.
Ooh, let's talk a little bit about Punch Drunk Love. I'll kick things off here a little bit because I'm curious. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, but it's been a long time, and it's not one that I revisit for the PTAs.
It's definitely, at that time, I think it hit me like right as I was really starting to get into the movies, like, and started chasing down, because I think I had seen Magnolia, and this was a couple of years after Punch Drunk Love came out. And I was sort of like out on Sandler for a little bit at that point. I think I saw Deeds and I was like, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, but it's just, he's not the same Sandler. That's kind of how I felt after that movie. Mr. D's not making my top list. But
Movie I have a lot of fondness for, but not on my list.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. Some good Turturro in there. But I definitely felt like Punch Drunk Love was a surprise because I did visit it a couple years later. And I think I was happy I did see that when I was a little bit older because it made me appreciate a little more of what the Adam Sandler movies meant to me at that time. So I think it's a great like linchpin to talk about here right now in the middle of like our rankings, because I think it made me reflect on kind of that idea that I didn't even realize about Big Daddy. I was like, oh, like he is doing like the first sort of like commentary about his characters, right? Like, it's like, what if this character that he played was like in like a serious person in the world, right? And people are like, oh, this anger, this energy you're getting off, it's very frightening.
Right.
And I think you put that in Paul Thomas Anderson's hands to really like mold that. And it really kind of like sheds it in a whole different way. And you're like, whoa, okay. Actually, this isn't as cute or like as like funny anymore. You're like, this guy's got something going on. But then it forces him to kind of reckon with that. And I like that too, that like you're almost like, what is it saying about the person that you do get this out of Sandler? And it's not a funny movie. It's not at all, but I don't know. I think it's shot great. Like, it's really in that early PTA moment. I think it's like, this movie walks so There Will Be Blood could run.
Mm-hmm.
We'll save that for the PTA episode, though. I got a lot of great things to say about that movie.
Yeah, I probably will be revisiting Punch Drunk Love because I think I saw it when it came out and I was 14 and I was expecting maybe more of the Sandler vibe. So I don't think I was quite ready for it. But with One Battle After Another coming out, which I am very excited to go see, I probably will start from the beginning and kind of go through the PTAs again just to get ready.
Little Lenny D in that one too.
Lenny D?
Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh.
I keep seeing the trailers and I'm getting very excited for that movie.
It definitely looks like it's gonna be worth going and watching, that's for sure. But yeah, Punch Drunk Love. I mean, I think it really caught me too, because I remember seeing Popeye at a young age and they keep using the weird song that Shelley Long sings in that movie that is like a motif throughout the Punch Drunk Love. And I'm just like, what a weird thing to pull, but it works. Like, and I don't know, it's just some really good performances. It's Sandler, I think, doing his first, like, I'm going to try and go against just being a comedy. I think he got a taste for some of the drama flair with some of his movies. And he's like, I really want an auteur to do something with me and set the stage for some later jump that I think I really appreciated.
Well, I'll save it because we actually have a section for it. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm excited. I have a coulda, woulda, shoulda, and I didn't, but now I do.
Oh,
I'll save it.
All right. Sounds good. I don't know. So that's all I got to say about Punch Drunk Love. I won't overdo it. It's just a well-made movie.
Gotcha.
What you got for number two?
Number two, I have Billy Madison.
All right. Not on my list.
Not on your list. Okay.
That was a tough, that is a tough cut.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love that movie growing up.
I think this might be the funniest of the wackiest character movies.
Mm.
Of the movies where he's doing like a big wacky character, I think this probably has the most jokes,
mm-hmm.
the most moments. It's the start of like, and I think at the time most of these people weren't that famous, of faces kind of popping in and like having one scenes like Steve Buscemi, I think of, or God, I can't, Norm MacDonald being in it.
Yep, Farley.
Mm-hmm, Farley for sure. This movie has the thing that I was talking about and kind of briefly mentioned, where there's just this kind of living vicariously through someone who's like insanely rich, who has access to like the coolest setup, but also it was kind of like, oh, he's also drinking kegs and doing stuff that is naughty, which as a kid I was like, I wouldn't want to do that stuff, but I'd like to do the fun stuff in the tub though, that looks fun.
Or yeah, like,
you know, hang out with my friends by the pool all day and get nudie mags. I don't really have much to say other than I think this is the most jokes. It is the least put together of a movie of those early movies compared to some of the ones that we've mentioned. But it also has, it kind of allows itself to be wackier and give us moments like the musical number.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
It does kind of feel like a series of almost sketches in a way.
Yes.
And I do appreciate the hell out of that, because I think when you do build a movie like that off a lot of like punchlines and things, and that kind of becomes his formula. I'll say it right on now. I think it's more successfully done with Happy Gilmore, but and I think that's ultimately why on my list when I picked Happy Gilmore over Billy Madison, that was why, because I think it uses that formula more successfully, even if it's, and it's a little bit tighter. But Billy Madison definitely has, I think, some of the bigger, like, I don't know, the bigger swings, I think, as you kind of said.
I think it's bigger swings, and I think it's got the most jokes of all these. I'm not saying it's necessarily the funniest. I think it's just got the most jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, introduction to Bradley Whitford.
Yeah.
As kind of like a snivelly little asshole, which I love to see.
Yeah.
Especially like going back and watching The West Wing, thinking that this was like around the same time, is always funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're very similar but different characters on those, that show and that movie.
There's like four different flavors of Bradley Whitford I always think about, and they always stick in my head. Like the first is like he showed up very randomly in like Revenge of the Nerds 2, which is like, that's how like all these like guys, like I feel like you get like in the stupid like 80s comedy like that, and you get like a little bit part as like a college guy or like some like douche. Sort of like Bradley, why is his name escaping me? The Texas guy in Star is Born.
Bradley Cooper?
Bradley Cooper, yeah. Right? Because like, he's kind of like comes in as sort of like the jerk in Wedding Crashers.
Right.
That's sort of like, yeah, Whitford's like introduction, and then you get this in Billy Madison where he's just sort of like just mm-hmm. a character actor. Then you get The West Wing where he's a little more dramatic, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get like Get Out where he's sort of like sinister, and I don't know. I really appreciate his performance more in this movie, I think, based on those other things.
He can give you good wasp, but like the best is when he's at a job and he's stressed out.
Yeah.
That's the best Whitford, whether it's Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, so I was just about to call that out.
Yeah, like him just like in a white button up with the sleeves rolled up, sweating and like wiping his head. That's what you want out of Bradley Whitford.
So close to the merman. But even looking at the conch.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the best in theater experiences I ever had.
Me too. Richard Jenkins too with him. That was a pairing you didn't know you needed until they did it.
For sure.
But yeah, Billy Madison, it's a classic. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute classic of Sandler. Like I said, extremely difficult cut. But I also, like I said, it's just because I think there's a couple others and I'm like, kind of, it's that formula and then some. But
I'll drop that deuce.
Number two for me is Happy Gilmore.
Mm.
So I think you had this at, or no, I'm sorry. You had Happy Gilmore higher.
I didn't say Happy Gilmore. I said I had it higher.
That's right. No, I'm sorry. So no, that's Happy Gilmore was my number four. I'm trying to backtrack here. Happy Gilmore is my number four. My number two is The Wedding Singer.
Oh, okay.
Because, and I think for one major reason is that, one, it was my first Adam Sandler film experience, or in theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
Had a really good memory with my dad and my sister. I remember laughing a lot at that. And I remember it kind of started to play into more of this, like, mixing in more drama, I think more intentionally in a way, but still in a way that you still knew you were watching a comedy, but still, like, it was giving everyone a little bit more of a chance to, like, do more of a range of things that Happy Gilmore starts to touch on, where you sort of see, like, okay, we can introduce some drama in here and you get some good things, but ultimately it still feels a little slapsticky. Whereas this is, I think, it was a drama that had a lot of comedy versus being a comedy with some drama in it. Does that make sense?
Yep. And I haven't revisited it, but that was why at the time I was not a fan, because it was too much of a rom-com for me.
Yeah. Which I could see that argument, but I don't know. I think he has incredible chemistry with Drew Barrymore, which is why they repair it again, right, for 50 First Dates, which it will not be on a number one. So.
And Blended, I think.
Oh, that, what is Blended? Is that?
Blended is like they go to Africa or something.
That's it? That's the premise?
I don't know. I just know there's a movie called Blended and Africa's in it, and I still don't know if that's... I know he and Drew did another one, but I'm like pretty sure that's the other one.
Yeah. That sounds right, but I mean, I thought they really hit it off in this movie. It's like just a great pairing.
Good music.
Great music. Really fun stuff. Him singing, which, you know, it's like, and that's a huge element too of this movie, is like, certainly you have the musical number in Billy Madison, right? And you have like him kind of doing some stuff in these other movies, but here you're getting him like singing. He's got a good voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're kind of getting his, like, the musical side of him. He plays into, he's pulling all from all the different tools in his tool belt. And I think this was the first time I was like, Sandler can act a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you feel his heartbreak when he gets left at the altar a little bit. And they're playing Don't Stop Believing in the background.
Billy Idol.
Great little cameo from him.
Mm-hmm.
One dude, oh my God, I can't think of the guy's name. The guy who plays Glenn Gooley or whatever, Drew Barrymore's fiance in the movie.
No, I don't remember.
But he showed up in the movie or the show Better Things. Did you ever watch that with Pamela Adlon?
I did not.
She plays like his ex-husband in that, and he's still kind of doing that same thing. It reminded me how good he is in this movie, because he plays kind of that similar thing, but almost with like more sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, man, he really plays a good scumbag. I don't know. You feel a little bad for people who are so good at that, but it's also like, if you can do it, you're going to get paid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Wedding Singer, it just hit a lot of the check boxes for me.
I get you.
So that's my number two. What about you?
Well, now we all know it's Happy Gilmore.
All right.
I have Happy Gilmore number one because it takes Billy Madison. It has a bunch of jokes and it gives it a plot and story. It's a sports movie, which even though I don't really care for sports in general, I love a sports movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it introduced, like you were talking about, it has heart. And it's a love story in there.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just like how much he cares for his grandmother is what makes the movie good.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I, not all I have to say, but that's where I'll leave it and stop talking.
No, but I think you're right, though. It's great supporting roles in it. I mean, this is why I had it on my list, too. At number four, you get some good Christopher McQuarrie,
director of the Mission Impossible movies.
Christ, I can't come up with anyone's name today.
Isn't it Christopher McDonald?
McDonald, that's it. Come on, that's close though.
I guess. Shooter McGavin, great name.
Yes.
Great character. Probably the best Sandler villain.
That's what I was going to say. As good as Woodford is in Billy Madison, I think McDonald is going just the, because he's like stooping down to his level. And like you, I mean, to an extent that it's like he's going over the top. Mm-hmm. And he gets that guy who's like that dude from SCTV.
Right.
You know what I mean? He gets
Joe Flaherty, I think his name is.
And he's like, I thought we were going to go to the Red Lobster.
Sizzler, is that what it is?
Or Sizzler, yeah.
Also, great Ben Stiller.
Stiller is a great cameo.
Mm-hmm.
But we're missing the big one, though, of Carl Weathers.
Weathers. Do like Carl Weathers, Chubbs. I just always loved the line from Ben Stiller because, like, his whole thing is he has a nursing home and he pretends to be nice, but then he's got all the nursing home ladies, like, working for him. And the one little lady saying, like, my fingers hurt. And he goes, your fingers hurt? Well, now your back's going to hurt because you just pulled landscaping duty. I don't know why that line makes me laugh so much.
Because he's such an awful person.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, and I think it's tough is, like, they cut out a lot of these scenes. And I think it was it in the movie where he throws him out the window?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Because I thought there was, like, I thought that was, like, a scene that might have been cut from, like, the original run. Which, like, that's in Billy Madison, too. There's, like, a kickball game that got cut because it was just very, like, extended and, like, completely unnecessary. But very funny scene.
My introduction to the Ramones.
Oh, yeah. Which Ramone song is in this one again?
It's in Billy Madison during the dodgeball scene.
Oh, with
the beat on the brat.
Yeah. Oh, right. Dodgeball. I was thinking kickball. I'm sorry. There's a kickball sequence,
that's what
too.
I mean. Oh, yeah. Dodgeball was what I mean. Yeah.
Yes. So dodgeball is in Billy Madison. Kickball was a cutscene from Billy Madison. That's like a special features extra on like the DVDs. But yeah, Happy Gilmore. I thought there was like an extra scene with Ben Stiller, too, that didn't make the final cut.
It's possible.
Which it does make a lot of sense. But I thought it was him, like, finally getting his comeuppance or something like that. And I couldn't remember. Like, but I do know there is a scene where he gets thrown out of a window, and it's pretty great.
Julie Bowen from Modern Family.
Yeah.
You know, introduction looks pretty much exactly the same as she does today.
Seriously, she did not age.
I really like the scene where they're at the ice rink. Their date is really nice.
Don't friends listen to Endless Love in the Dark?
Mm-hmm.
It's just so good. I think my scene that had me in stitches, though, as a kid was when he goes and plays mini golf with Carl Weathers and he can't get it in the clown's mouth and he just goes and knocks the clown's nose off, which that was the first time I think I really understood the anger piece of it. But I was like, man, so many times you feel like that playing mini golf and he's acting it out again, kind of acting out the fantasy that you wish.
I do feel like when I revisit it, though, I'm really in on the Shooter McGavin scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's such a good asshole and, like, just so funny and looks so doofusy when he's, like, getting into it too much.
Well, what I love is when he plays off of Richard Kiel, I think it is, who plays, like, his old
Oz.
Yeah. He's, like, just razzing him from the stands, kind of giving him the reverse Joe Flaherty for, like, him.
Yeah.
And he's like, you have to... He's like, your ball struck my foot. his delivery. So good. But I remember a piece of like trivia is like he was like in like a lot of pain, like because he was just so big.
Yeah.
And so he was like, well, you always see him leaning on somebody. And it's because he like had to. He couldn't stand up for extended periods.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad they gave him that chance.
For sure.
So that was your number one?
That was my number one. Happy That's like Gilmore. Quintessential Adam Sandler movie for me because it has the balance of the humor and the heart.
Yeah, it does that all that very well. Mm-hmm. I will not judge it at all. It's a great pick. Which gets us to my number one, which we already teed off of the very first thing we mentioned, Uncut Gems.
Mm.
This is how I win.
I disagree.
But what do you got to say about Uncut Gems? Because I know this was your number five, and then I'll go for why it's my number one.
This was a movie that I kept hearing about. I remember the first still came out of him, and I was like, this is going to be great, especially after seeing the other Safdie Brothers movie with Robert Pattinson.
Good Time?
Good Time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, man, if these guys are making it, and I hear it's about like a jeweler in New York and like betting. I kind of knew or had hopes of what I was expecting to see. And then when I saw it, it was exactly what I wanted, which is this, like, tense, high pace. To me, it didn't, like, it doesn't affect me how some people, like, say it affects them, where they're like, oh, it made me too anxious. I'm like, it didn't make me too anxious, because that's not a world I, like, live in. Like, you know, like, I don't bet on sports. I don't do jewelry stuff. Him and his, like, uncle or cousin or whatever it is, Richard Bogosian, I think, is playing him. I love that relationship. I love the way those guys shoot movies. I'm kind of bummed they don't make movies together anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in seeing The Smashing Machine to see, like, how a Benny Safdie movie feels on its own.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's got that same flavor. That's a trailer I'm sick of seeing, I will say.
Smashing Machine, is that the one with Rock?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm excited for that movie, but I've seen that trailer so many times.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I totally get it. And I know what you're saying, too, about the anxiety thing, but I think that plays into why this movie is so good. And I think this is why, I mean, this is like the crowning, like, moment for me of, like, the Safdie. So I was like, okay, now I will see whatever these guys got cooking or whatever each of them individually is up to.
Right.
I love the way they make a movie. You know, somebody who is into sports or whatever, seeing Kevin Garnett coming in there and actually, like, doing a decent job acting and, like, going through this whole rigmarole, and then you're, like, watching him trying to hit the bet and, like, get the parlay. And I am like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're like, is they actually going to pull this off? And you kind of realize it's going to be all for, like, naught, basically.
Yeah.
Oh man. It's just the most, like, every moment you're kind of, like, hanging on the edge of your seat. Like, how is he going to weasel out of this? How is he going to find his way back? And I think that's the power of Sandler, like, really channeling, like, everything that he's never quite gotten to display. And it's such a role, like, as much as I like Punch Drunk Love, I think this is, like, the culmination of him. Like, I want to chase roles like that and give me a character to play at the same time that can do something different.
Yeah, I was sad he didn't get the nom. Yeah. I didn't think he should win, but I think he should have gotten the nom.
It's, man, we'll talk about that on the Oscar nominations episode. I got so many issues with some of the nominations recently, and just some snubs that I'm like, what are we doing here? Well, the Emmy noms too, especially this year. I was like, left out our guy Diego Luna. What are we doing?
Yeah, well, it's Star Wars. That's not real TV.
Oh, sure, yeah. But you know what? We got to make sure every fucking member of White Lotus and the Bear get nominated over and over again.
Well, it's just that thing. They're like, what's a show that gets great reviews? We'll just give them noms every time. It's the Succession thing. Even though for the most part, I agree with most of those.
Yeah, but yeah.
But it is kind of like they find their shows and that's what they give awards to.
Exactly. But I think it makes me mad, especially for somebody who is easy to cheer for, like Adam Sandler, snubbing him when you know he's giving you a good performance. It's like, and like, who even won that year? Do we even know anymore?
Like, no, I was just trying to think of, like, what were the other noms?
Yeah, because Uncut Gems came out in 2019. So 2019 Oscar nominations. So what we're after. I would bet you we got some, maybe that Bradley Cooper in Star is Born. That's a very, what did I tell you? That's exactly it. Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born. Rami Malek won for Bohemian Rhapsody, which,
okay, that's the one you can get out. That's easy.
Well, I got another one for you. Viggo in Green Book.
I mean, I do like how he fold pizza, though. I would get rid of Rami Malek over Viggo, because Viggo's acting his ass off, whether or not the material is good.
I don't know. Christian Bale in Vice, that's when he's doing
shit. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And then you got Willem Dafoe at Attorney's Gate. And I'm like, I feel like Dafoe is the one that people are going to be looking back, and I'm like, it's good that we gave him all those noms, because he's probably doing great work in all these movies no one's seen.
Yeah, well, Dafoe should have won for Florida Project is what I always say, but
has he won yet? No.
No.
He's been nominated probably like 5 times at this point.
Probably a few times for sure.
But yeah, that should have been a year. There's at least 2 performances. I'm like, you could have chucked one for Sandler and I would have been, he doesn't need to win.
No, just a nom.
Yeah. Should have, I don't know. I could have gone with Cooper on that one. He was pretty damn good in that movie. So that gets us through the rankings here, Fred. But We're doing things out of order here. Well, one, I guess first, were there any honorable mentions you wanted to bring up that didn't get covered?
Really? The only one was like, Big Daddy was like the big one. That was the one that was kind of scratching the top for me. I'm trying to think if there was any others that were up there for me, but that was probably the one.
Yeah. I am trying to think if there is anything, like, we mentioned Mr. Deeds. That is a fun time.
I enjoy Mr. Deeds, but it has similar to Airheads where it's not extremely funny, but it's like a nice, it's a good like winter watch, like, yeah, around the holidays.
For sure. I know some people are like, how did we not talk about Hotel Transylvania?
Blah, blah, blah. I do like those Hotel Transylvania movies. They're good Halloween movies.
I don't think I've seen any of them start to finish.
That's a great, like, mid-October on a Wednesday. Like, I want to feel, like, in the spirit, but what's going on? You throw on a Hotel Transylvania because it's a Tarkovsky? Gene Tarkovsky? I can never pronounce his name, but the Samurai Jack guy does the, like, he's like the director. So,
oh, that's pretty cool.
It's like good animation is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, even though it has like the, like, oh, this feels like a DreamWorks, whatever. It's actually like a pretty fun animated movie. At least like the first one I remember liking.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I've always, that's probably one day. Like if I have kids one day, I'll probably watch a little Hotel T. I think the only movie that I realized we didn't really mention, I mentioned it offhandedly, but it was another one I saw in theaters, was Waterboy. Waterboy is dumb. it's
and you don't love a dumb Sandler.
I like dumb Sandler. I mean, Happy Gilmore is on my list, but he's also not too dumb.
No. Billy Madison, but you don't have that on your list. And you don't like Lil Nicky. And you don't like Hubie Halloween.
Hubie Halloween was tough.
That was a return to form, my man.
Usually, I will watch through a Sandler movie if I don't love it. But Hubie Halloween, I'd turn off.
You're the only one, my man.
Yeah, right.
Everyone I know loves Hubie Halloween. I remember in the group chat, we were all going for it.
Was that a pandemic watch?
Yeah, that was a pandemic watch.
For sure. That's probably why I was in a bad mood.
Too. Probably. Fresh breath of air. That's what I felt when I watched Hubie Halloween.
But I don't dislike the Waterboy. I mean, it's a football movie, so obviously I was on board with that, and I remember laughing. I think it's a funny Sandler performance, especially.
Go ahead. I was just going to say something wrong with his medulla oblongata.
Yeah, plus there's gators in that.
I do love a gator. I love Kathy Bates. Henry Winkler is the MVP of that movie,
though. Henry Winkler. Yeah, you're kind of wondering, like, why was he not doing more stuff around then? And then it took him, I think, finally getting, like, Barry to prove that, like, oh, actually he should have been working for consistently for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than that. But yeah, Waterboy's fun. That's all I have to say about that. Let's talk about any coulda, woulda, shoulda. Show me the franchise here, Fred. What was anything you had with Sandler?
I have one big coulda and shoulda.
Okay.
Which is Adam Sandler was cast and was supposed to be in a movie. Movie I would put in my top five movies of all time, but because of scheduling conflicts, could not be in the movie. And that movie is Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, that's right.
He was supposed to be the Bear Jew. That would have been amazing. If you picture that scene, him coming out and, you know, Sandler, he probably would have put on some arm muscle for it, coming out with a baseball bat, slamming it against the wall with a New York accent. A vengeful dude, a Jewish guy from New York who is coming across to, like, kill Nazis.
Yeah.
How perfect would that have been? If you had, like, that scene and, like, what's his name? Eli Roth is putting way too much mustard on it. But if it was Sandler putting that same mustard on it, that would have been just a game changer.
Well, and you know that with Tarantino, he would have brought out, like, the real almost kind of, like, sinister kind of side of him. Sort of like what we see in Punch Drunk Love a little bit. Like, that more, like, lean into this wild animal that you can play, right? And, yeah, I would have loved to see that. I mean, it's a great movie regardless, but also Myers in that one, too, in a part.
Yeah.
Doing that British accent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. But that's probably the biggest coulda, woulda, shoulda I can think of. sort of like the Will Smith like Matrix thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
or Django.
What's Smith doing after like 1998? He just got like scared because of Wild Wild West.
Same.
Like.
He was supposed to be Neo in the Matrix.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Neo in the Matrix. He could have been Django in Wild Wild West. Or Wild.
He was in Wild West.
Django and mm-hmm. Django Unchained. I'm like, is there anything with Adam Sandler, though, that you think he hasn't done yet that you'd want to see him do?
I honestly, it's work with Tarantino.
Tarantino would be a, I mean, it feels like that needs to somehow happen maybe at some point. I just want him to keep lending himself out. Like, he wants to go make his Netflix movies and mm-hmm. keep, like, knocking about and making these whatever. Like, that's fine. Go earn your paycheck. Support your family, whatever you're doing. But just give me one. Give me like an Uncut Gems like every 3 years, something like that, where you're going for a little gold. And if somebody gets their hands on you and gives you something, doing something good, maybe get a trophy out of it.
Well, did you watch Hustle?
No,
I did not either. But I hear he's really good in that.
I did, too. I actually heard that movie surprisingly better than you expect.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I was trying to think about where he was kind of doing that was Spanglish, but I don't remember really loving that movie.
Or Meyerowitz Stories, but he's reteaming with Baumbach again.
Oh, is that right?
The new movie with him and George Clooney.
Mm.
So that's the other guy he'll do like the drama for is the Baumbach. Yeah.
Yes, he does need to find it. You know what else be interesting too? Because I would love for him to do like one blowout movie where he just can get a bunch of guys, a bunch of people, do a Marty and get like some Scorsese, just him like rolling up with De Niro again. Or no, he's never with De Niro. Pacino.
Jack Nicholson,
Anger Management.
Yeah.
Kind of tried to do the like the funny people thing of sorts, but not as successful.
I wish Anger Management was a little better just because I like Jack Nicholson's my favorite actor, hands down.
Yeah.
And them together is great. When you watch the movie, like the scenes with them together are really good, but the movie's just not quite there.
It's them singing that West Side Story.
I Feel Pretty, yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. So we did the power rankings. We did our Show Me the Franchise. This is weird because I'd be like, hey, we're now on our power rankings, but I think that's our episode now.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Anything else you want to say about Adam Sandler, though?
No, I think that was about it. I'm excited. Maybe we'll get some more, you know, fun performances, interesting things, but I'm always interested to see what he's doing.
Yeah, I think I'll check out some of the stuff. Funny People feels like one I'll reach for. If I'm like home alone, I got nothing else to reach for, I might go for Happy Gilmore too, but I'm not in a rush. It sounds kind of cash grabby to me a little bit, but I don't know. Or maybe Nostalgia Bait is maybe more of the
thing. Yeah, it'd probably be better. Yeah.
Not a cash grab. He doesn't do cash grabs. He does projects that he likes. But yeah, I like Sandler a lot. I think he's, like I said, I've said it over and over again, great guy to pull for, and I hope good things for him in the future. I just want more Sandler. So that's the end of our episode here, Fred. But before we go, anything you would like to plug?
I'm just going to plug, first of all, Father Figure Show, 8/29.
Yes. Yeah.
Tickets are going fast, so grab them. Grab them before they're all bought up.
That's right.
And also, we once did an episode on The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up on 8/22, which I believe is a Friday, I will be performing in a show called Milwaukee Mafia.
Oh.
It's a mafia-themed improv show, and Chris Good, who was our guest on the Sopranos episode, will also be in that show.
Nice.
So if you like the Sopranos, you like that episode, you like comedy, come out for that show. That'll be a week before our show.
All right. So that's 8/22, so I think that's next Friday. If you're listening live with the broadcast, but otherwise, yeah, it's August 22nd. Check out the interchangetheater.com for details. And Father Figures, definitely. I'll be making my return to the stage with Fred, with some past guests and future guests, Scott Vollmer, Joe Francisco, Tony Berg. We're looking to have a great time. Come find us on August 29th, 7:30 p.m. at the Interchange Theater, interchangetheater.com for details. Otherwise, check out, either you can check the Show Me the Franchise social media, which we are on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads. You can also check out the Father Figures Facebook and Instagram. We are on both of those channels as well for more details. We're excited to bring you more content, more happy times with all of us together. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate and review it. If you have not joined our Patreon, you can join today for just $1 per month for some exclusive content. We'll have some one bonus episode per month. This month, Fred, we are taking a journey back to talk about Ari Aster. We're talking about Eddington. Watcha!
This is a Western.
It is a modern Western. And boy, will we have some things to say about that. Stay tuned for that episode. And special thanks to Nick Spitzer and Mike Schwantz for our opening and closing theme songs. Just finished another season of Taskmaster. That was all generated from the Taskmaster episode with Jason Manzoukas. That was super exciting. Yeah, we might have to do another Taskmaster check-in, maybe via the Patreon or something.
Yeah.
Starting to think. I'm like catching some stuff. And stay tuned for next time, where we'll be talking on our main feed about college pro painters.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see you then. Got no cares, cause all I wanna do is charge my phone, drive, listening to you. And what they talk to you about will.